Fairbanks, welcome back. I have the Attorney General, State of Alaska, Treg Taylor, in the studio here with me. This is a pre-recorded show, so we're not taking phone calls. I appreciate it, though. So, you know, there's that song, 40 Days in the Hole, and then you had 70 presidential edicts against Alaska that you had to fight. That's overwhelming.
At times it seemed like it was overwhelming. You know, as I mentioned in that previous segment, without the aid of the other attorneys general in the other states, watching sort of all the Second Amendment issues, all the free speech issues, all of those types of issues, we couldn't have done it. And you know, we actively coordinated those cases with each other and had actually a plan in place even before he took office. We met in Florida in the middle of COVID. Florida was the only state where we let our meeting occur. And we met and we formulated a plan. We divided and conquered. We all joined, you know, sections that would be key on certain issues. You know, clearly there's energy issues that are important to Alaska, so we were on that committee. Second Amendment important to Alaskans, we were on that committee. And so that's what enabled to free up my office to focus 100% of its efforts on the battle that was over who decides what Alaska's future holds. And we felt like Alaskans should decide our own future, not some bureaucrat in some agency, not a president elected.
Yeah. Who was the person who was doing this?
Yes. Yes.
So I have to ask a sarcastic question now. Do you feel like with President Trump, you're on holiday?
No, we're loading up for the battle that we know is going to happen. I mean, a certain extent.
Well, you have the environmentalists now.
Right. So, you know, while we're all rowing in the same direction, you know, for Alaska's economic future, we know that the battles are coming. And so, you know, one of the things I tried to convey to the legislature this last round was, hey, we still need statehood defense funds. We still need that extra funds, A, because we have all these cases that are still from that Biden period, but also because we're going to have to defending the federal government now for their permitting and their actions and their, the things that they're doing to help Alaska, you know, determine its own economic destiny.
How much did they cut from the governor's budget for the Alaska Defense Fund?
We were supposed to receive $500,000 plus. We were hoping to get additional funds this year. Mm-hmm. So that was from a past legislature had, you know, sort of done a multi-year rollout. And so we didn't. They cut that from the budget, the $500,000, and then they didn't grant any additional funds. And so we're actively looking at all these cases, figuring out what the best way and what to do with these cases that are still ongoing. And there's some that we definitely want to continue because we need a final decision from the U.S. Supreme Court because mm-hmm. these issues are ones that have waffled every 4 years, depending on who is in office. And so we need a little more certainty on those issues. So we definitely want to pursue those all the way until a final decision by the U.S. Supreme Court. But then there's others, you know, that now we have an administration that has some of the same policy objectives that we do that we could work with and try to come to an amicable solution to these lawsuits.
You know, it seems like with the legislature, you have some attorneys that are state senators, and they probably think they know better than you, like Wielichowski out of Anchorage. You know, I just look at him and I shake my head, and he doesn't look at, in my opinion, he doesn't look at Alaska. He looks at his own personal politics and what's the best benefit for him. And so I'm not surprised that your budget was zeroed out for any reason whatsoever to help the state of Alaska, because his politics is probably based on making the governor not look good. Sadly, that's my personal opinion.
Yeah, you know, and that, you know, we were told at the beginning of this legislative session that they weren't going to hear any of the governor's bills.
Yeah.
And to say
so
that,
why be there?
Say that right out from the beginning,
yeah.
You know, that's not good for Alaska. Alaskans deserve better. There was good bills in there that would help further Alaska, further families here in Alaska that are trying to carve out a living. Yeah. And
they're asking why the governor wasn't down there.
You know, they did hear end up hearing a couple of them, but they're mainly the ones that they heard are the ones where they thought they could get in some good sound bites against the governor's position on those things. One example is the governor's Senate joint resolution where it was going to be a constitutional amendment on how we select judges.
Yeah.
And it was just a small tweak. So right now, the Alaska Judicial Council's own rules require only that they put forward the tallest timber. So basically, they take all the qualified people that have applied for a judgeship, and they only put forward the tallest timber for the governor to select from. And of course, many people that I talk to, they're adamant that this is just a I'll use a term from the left, a dog whistle for getting people into the judgeships that they want, that the Alaska Bar wants. And so the change in the Constitution would have been that they have to put forth all qualified candidates for the for the governor to select. And, you know, it's a small tweak, but with a big difference. And I think that was one of the hearings they held because they thought, you know, they could get in some great sound bites. And, of course, we defended that position, you know, because it's what more democratic than having the governor select from all qualified people. And guess who gets to set those qualifications?
Yeah.
The legislature, the people that people actually elect. Nobody elects the Alaska Judicial Council. And so that was the idea, is to bring this closer, these decisions closer to the people.
And then my thought would have been also, and then you have the legislature confirm the choice. There's only one aspect of confirmation that does not go before the legislature, and that's a judge.
That's a judge. Yes.
My personal thought. But, you know, hey, that's why I'm a mayor instead of a governor and a state senator.
At least for now, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. you know, you went through 70 executive orders against Alaska. You survived the Biden administration, you're in the Trump administration. But like what you said, you have every type of development, resource development that Alaska wants to do. You have the Northern Alaska Environmental Center or the Center for the Environment, whatever it is, whatever environmental cause, they're suing us to shut down and use us, in my opinion, as a fundraising mechanism for their cause. Alaska is the fundraising mechanism, and you deal with that on a daily basis.
Yeah, they pretty much have unlimited funds when they bring up the question of Alaska. You know, the polling that was done for the governor's conference, energy conference, it polled Alaskans, what Alaskans think about Alaska, and it also polled what the lower 48 thinks of Alaska. And both Alaskans and the people in the lower 48, you know, view Alaska very positively and look to Alaska to be an energy provider for the country and are in favor of developing those resources when it can be done, with a due respect for the environment. But but this environment at all costs is something that is designed to just shut down a civilization and make it almost impossible for you to raise a family here in Alaska.
And here's something I always also say. Alaska does resource development better, safer, more environmentally pristine than any place in the world. And if we're not doing it, you're buying it from China, Russia, India, Brazil, who do it the worst and the most environmental damage.
No, that is 100% right. You know, last year, China built enough, and they aren't clean coal plants. These are 70s technology. They built enough coal plants in 1 year last year to power the entire state of California, the entire state of New York, and then throw in four more of the smaller states. That's how much capacity they added in dirty coal burning plants. Now, obviously, clean coal technology has come a long way, and yet we don't avail ourselves to that technology here in Alaska. It's a source that could be of cheap electricity. You know, I think the number one economic driver, you're seeing these places that are just exploding in the lower 48 with economic activity. Part of that is the right regulatory and permitting structure. But the other part of that is there a secure, cheap source of energy?
Yeah.
And that's what folks are looking for. And that is why, you know, this Unleashing Alaska's Extraordinary Resource Potential, this executive order that Trump issued day one that focuses on unlocking Alaska, is so important, because it will be it will provide a source of clean, clean, cheap energy if we are able to get that gas line done.
Well, what's next on your agenda? Or do you know yet in regards to the latest environmental lawsuit coming in? What are you working on that you're focused on right now?
Well, the focusing is on making that executive order stick. You know, obviously with that energy conference, we had Secretary Burgum, Secretary Wright, and also, you know, the director for the EPA come up. And so having those discussions, trying to work on making that fulfill that executive order,
yeah.
Which, by the way, is if you look at it, it's like a Christmas list. If you were a kid and you had a Christmas list of all the province you wanted done in Alaska, that is the list.
I sort of made it to one big beautiful bill. Here it is, one big beautiful Alaska Resource Development Executive Order.
Yes.
You go, guys, you go.
And so that is a focus of the Department of Law, that is the focus of the governor, is to put that executive order into action and get these projects done for Alaskans.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. You're listening to KFAR Radio. Again, this is a recorded session with the Attorney General, Craig Taylor, and we'll be back after these messages. Fairbanks, welcome back. I have Craig Taylor in the studio here with his lovely wife, Jody. She darts in and out to make sure that I am being polite. or maybe she's just getting, you know, encumbered by the purple padded room. I don't know. What do you think, Attorney General Taylor?
I think she's here to make to check up on me here, make sure I'm behaving. So.
Oh, darn. Okay. Yeah. Okay. How much time do you spend in Juneau during the session besides too much?
Oh, wow. So it varies on session. So yeah. This session was extremely light. You know, I made plans to be down there supporting the governor's bill, supporting the governor's agenda. But when the legislature comes out and decides they're not going to hear any of the governor's bill, there's not a lot of reason for me to be down there. So we went down when I had hearings this year. We went down to make the initial introduction to the new legislators that were down there and work with allies of the governor on his bills.
Mm-hmm.
But so it was pretty limited touch to Juneau this year, and my family appreciated it. But I think it was
six kids and a wonderful wife.
Six kids, yeah. So they appreciated me being home a little more, but I would have really liked to have been down there fighting for Alaskans to get some of this agenda done.
You know, right now, it's a very exciting time with the work the governor's done on the LNG project. And I'm sure that, you know, a lot of that is you, your firm, your staff, you know, the Department of Natural Resources, Attorney General's office, the legalities of everything going on. Do you have any thoughts on what the state of Alaska is doing with this?
Yeah, no, it's impressive. It's a huge undertaking, and the win that President Trump has given this project in his push overseas when he's in Asia, he's talking about this project and the tariff disputes that he's having with our friendly countries in Asia. This is part of that dispute. This is Alaska gas, and we'll see these tariffs decrease. So he is doing everything in his power to see that gas line come to fruition. I honestly think that he views this as his legacy project. You know, and he wants.
Oh, really?
He wants to be involved in the biggest project in U.S. history, right?
Yeah. So, oh, duh.
Yeah. And so he has put
final answer.
Yeah. No, he has put the full weight of the federal government behind that project, and so we are, which has provided the gas to make this project
impetus,
to get this project going. And so, you know, the where we're at now with Glen Farm purchasing 75% of 8-Star, which used to be owned by the Alaska Gasline Development folks. So now 75% of that project is owned by a private entity that has skin in the game, that is trying to get this project forward.
They've already said we don't need Ada's $50 million loan guarantee.
Yeah, no, it's that's exactly right. And you know, that was I won't get into the technicalities yet, but you're right on that. And so the
it just shows you this is moving forward.
Yeah. And you know, Glen Farn, the CEO, was at the energy conference, spoke to the conference, and his words were extremely encouraging. He's talked about what this project has that no other project has, all the permitting, all the right-of-way. It's got test bore holes drilled the whole length of the project. It has both federal and state support. Where else do you see this in the world? And then he talked about, you know, the concerns with project overruns and of the all the recent sort of pipeline projects, and he named a couple of them, talked about the ones in Canada that were way over budget. And those delays in that budget pressure came from the lack of permitting, the lack of right-of-way. And we don't have that problem in Alaska.
Yeah.
And so we've got that going for us. And then geopolitically throughout the world, it seems like everything is pushing our way on this project. The uncertainty surrounding the Panama Canal right now, where ships are waiting 10 days either side of that. You know, the fact that we can ship directly. So right now, providers are, do I wait 10 days on either side of the Panama Canal and deal with that political mess? Or do I take a ship around Africa through contested waters?
Cape of Good Hornand get shot at by the Houthis.
Or maybe support this project in Alaska where we can get gas to Asia within 7 to 8 days.
If it was me, I'm Italian. I try and act in conspiracies and in a way that's good for me. Yeah. I would make sure Lloyd's of London does not insure those boats going around the Cape of Good Hope.
Well, you're right, and there's many companies that just refuse to do it.
Yeah.
It's just not. There's too risky, too much uncertainty with it, and these boats are expensive, and there's no reason to send them into harm. And we provide that solution for Asia. They looked at what Asia also has to observe what happened in Europe when Russia invaded Ukraine and that what happened with gas supplies at that point and the pressure points that Europe felt. And so there's lessons they can learn. They've got pressure from the Trump administration, and it's in their best interest to get these resources from allies and not enemies of the state.
You know, we're a small state in population. Big state in mass, but we also come across items on a national basis. And what I'm going to be asking about now, you're front and center on this. You have the city of Anchorage, municipality of Anchorage, that has claimed itself to be a area that will not turn over people of illegal entry into the state of Alaska. You know, Has that reared its ugly head with you as an attorney general yet?
So the issue, clearly it got on the naughty list. We saw that, right?
Yeah.
So that Trump put them on the list of non-compliant political subdivisions.
And just so you know, they wanted Fairbanks to be a town of, you know, you could do that.
Yeah.
And I was on the city council, and it was, oh, hell no. Oh, hell no. And I got... they came to the city council and wanted us to do that. And I got 172 emails saying, are you guys nuts? I was going, oh, no, we're not. We're not doing this.
Well, clearly it is a violation of federal law. And we're seeing the repercussions of that in LA right now and the other areas that are in complete chaos because of those policies. And, of course, if you're here illegally and you're – continue to commit crimes, where would you go if you were that person? Well, I'd go to LA.
Yeah.
Seems it's good for business there.
Yeah. This, you know, I'm looking at LA right now over the last week, and I'm saying, okay, we have people from not in the United States waving Mexican flags, burning up buildings, throwing rocks at police cars. Maybe we should send some people into Mexico and have them show American flags, burn up buildings, throw rocks. Oh, that's right. They'd get shot.
Right.
That's a difference.
Right. Yeah. No, it's there. That is a difference. And
so Anchorage is a sanctuary city per se. Fairbanks is not. How, you know, is the state of Alaska dealing with that all on a legal basis?
As of yet, no. We haven't had to address that because it hasn't become an issue yet.
Good. Good for
and
you.
So, we'll see what comes down the road. I think ICE kind of has their hands full right now. I'm not sure when they're going to turn their focus to Alaska or if they ever turn their focus to Alaska. I think for per population, we're not a big center for illegal immigration. But
they're saying a
few
to be housed up here, but that's fine. Yeah. We get some money for that.
Yeah. And so, like I said, we'll see. We're just waiting to see how that turns out. But definitely that was – when I saw that come across the board, I was like, okay, where are we at as a state?
Canada. You can't even go over the Chilkoot Pass now and cross into Canada. What? Come on, Canada.
Yeah. That was a hard – that was – their last elections was hard to watch.
Man,
there was such an opportunity for Canadians to sort of pull out of the nosedive that they've been in economically due to their policies. I actually lived in Canada during the first Trudeau administration, and I could just remember my parents ranting and raving about Trudeau over and over and again. And so when Trudeau number two, his son, came to power, I was like, okay, here, let's watch this. And it has been this slow
socialist Marxist government takeover.
And it's been remarkable. And I thought there was a lot of hope there. The timing of that election for the Liberals in Canada, great. For the Conservatives, horrible timing for that, you know, right as Trump's talking about the tariffs and everything else. And you know, that can't be helped. It's not Trump's fault. It's Canadians choose their government, select their government. If they want to choose the socialist society, then that's their right. Certainly that's not what I hope for my children.
And, you know, when you can't even – go over a historic trail, the Chilkoot, 33 miles. Really? But, you know, I can understand you closing a road because of a fire. I can understand that. But not barring this, the invasion of Americans coming over the trail.
Right. Right.
Wanting a good Canadian beer when we get done.
Yeah. So Jody and I took an RV trip during COVID. She mainly, because I had work to do as the attorney general, but I joined them on long weekends down in the lower 48. And of course we had to buy the motorhome in the lower 48 because Canada wouldn't let us drive it down through during COVID. And so, but one of the things that I was down there to join them for was the Niagara Falls portion of the trip.
Yeah.
And Canada literally had the ringed barbed wire, you know, like you see at a prison, down that pedestrian bridge to keep Americans from coming across.
Or we're such an invasion force. Overall, if you look at it, Canada is a great, great neighbor.
Yep.
It just is. And so here's to them, and hopefully their government gets better versus getting any worse.
I hope, because they play a key ally, right? A key ally to the United States and been a friend to the United States for a long, long time. And so, we hope this progression towards becoming more like, you know, some of the European nations is sort of reversed when the people wake up and elect a government that's going to put Canada first.
Yeah. Well, we got about a minute left, sir. Thank you for being on the air. How do you want to end it with the last minute, Attorney General Craig Taylor?
Oh, I think, you know, just to give kudos to the good work that the attorneys and paralegals and assistants at the Department of Law do on a daily basis. You know, we do all of the prosecution in the state with the exception of a few misdemeanors in Anchorage and Juneau. And so that's a big load and a big responsibility. So really want to say thank you to those folks for doing that. And on the civil side, obviously, keeping state government afloat, defending lawsuits, looking out for children in need of aid. You know, that's a China. That's our biggest section on the civil side. That's a big that's a big responsibility. And it's an imperfect system, so it's a hard thing to do. So kudos to them for keeping that up. And then we do all this on the consumer protection side, and we've become very active on that side, trying to protect Alaska consumers from bad actors.
Attorney General Craig Taylor, thank you very much for being on the show. Fairbanks, that is our show for today. I will see you tomorrow.